welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good. Now, people should pay attention to the fact that Maggie introduced this, because I'm about to say that the next poem is dangerous for two guys to talk about, but we're going to try it. It is a study that comes from JAMA Internal Medicine, and it deals with the topic of sexual function in women. So here are two guys talking about sexual function in women, and we are told through research that sexual problems are common in women. In the United States, studies, often with some industry backing, suggest that about 40% of women have sexual concerns and 12% report distressing sexual problems, whatever distressing means. The rates increase after menopause, and they have different etiologies. As listeners will know, some trace back to a lack of sexual desire. Some have impaired arousal and inability to achieve orgasm. Pain with sexual activity is not uncommon. And a combination of any of these is also a cause of sexual problems. Of course, the treatment should be tailored to the diagnosis. You found a poem from JAMA Internal Medicine. It was published at the end of 2017. It starts on page 1471. Before I tell you what the question that it's answering is, let me just remind listeners that, you know, whenever you look at something as subjective as sexual problems, it's important that you have a metric or an instrument. And this study and many studies use a questionnaire called the Female Sexual Function Index, often abbreviated FSFI. It was designed to evaluate sexual function. It's undergone, you know, validation and reliability testing in a general population, but it has come under some criticism, and it's not condition specific. So with that, this particular study attempts to answer the question, does estrogen replacement therapy affect sexual function in menopausal women? Mark, does it?
Well, this is part of a larger study that's looking at estrogen replacement more broadly, and especially its effect on atherosclerosis progression. As everyone remembers, the Women's Health Initiative randomized women, or identified women mostly, who were 10 or more years from menopause. So this is recruiting women who are within 3 years of their last menstrual period. The average age was 53 years. And they were randomized to get either oral conjugated equine estrogen, you know, Premarin, 0.45 milligrams a day, a transdermal estradiol, 50 micrograms a day, or placebo for 4 years. They also got micronized progesterone for 12 days a month. The study was generally well-designed. There was appropriate concealment of allocation, how people got into the groups, and then masking of patients and outcome assessors during the study. As you mentioned, they used the FSFI to track sexual function. And, you know, again, as you mentioned, one of the things it doesn't measure is distress associated with low sexual function. And generally, that's needed. That's one of the components of making the diagnosis. If it's not distressing, we generally don't make that diagnosis or institute treatment potentially. FSFI scores on average were low at the start of treatment, about 18.4 to 19.1 out of a possible 36. 74% of women, 3 out of 4 women had a score less than 26.5, which is how low sexual function is defined. Over the course of the study, transdermal but not oral estrogen was associated with a small, statistically significant increase in the FSFI scores of 2.6 points, particularly in the lubrication and pain subscales of the inventory, which physiologically, I guess, makes sense. On the other hand, 67% of the women treated with transdermal estrogen still, after treatment, had a score below 26.5. And it's also not clear that a 2.6-point difference on a 36-point scale is clinically meaningful. While it's statistically significant, this is a big study, and they're going to find small differences that are statistically significant. It may or may not be clinically significant. I would say it's in the gray area of what would be clinically significant. On a 36-point scale, 5 points is probably pretty clearly significant clinically. 2 is pretty clearly not. So this is kind of in a gray area. So I'd say bottom line is that If you are concerned about treating sexual dysfunction in women, I would say an option that might be worth trying would be transdermal estrogen. It did provide a small improvement in sexual function scores. It's not a cure-all, clearly, based on these results. So the women in the study did have low baseline sexual function scores, but they weren't necessarily distressed. We really don't know the level of distress associated with them. So in some ways, this was a study of women, a broader population of women, and not just women with a complaint of sexual dysfunction.
Interesting. Some of the listeners may wonder, with oral estrogen, you obviously begin to get into the issue of breast cancer. Is that a factor that we should be thinking about and we should talk with patients about when we use transdermal estrogen?
You know, there is an increase in the risk of breast cancer with hormone replacement therapy. That absolute magnitude of that increase is relatively small. It clearly should be part of the shared decision-making, both the potential benefits and harms. Most of that data comes from oral estrogens and less so from transdermal estrogens, but there's no reason to think there's necessarily any difference. So that would be my take on it. I mean, clearly, the discussion about starting, transdermal estradiol should be a fairly detailed one, and it can be challenging because there are some things that get better, but there are other things that get worse with use of these. And so, I would think if you are specifically targeting sexual dysfunction, you would really want to monitor the patient and try to do as objective an assessment as possible of, their response. And if there's no clear response after 6 months, say, then probably wouldn't want to stop it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.